think Tevez going to Juventus, what a coup that was for me. I mean,
on a head-to-head battle, Atletico Madrid can do more damage to Barcelona than the other way around.
Either he's really blind, or he's fixing the match. I can't see it any other way.
I'm trying to get Sir Bob on my side here by saying City will win the Premier League.
It is an upset. You would expect Man United to go and win there.
Over $1 billion was paid in transfer fees between the clubs in Europe.
It's football. It's damn football. Like Ferguson said, football. Bloody marvellous.
Yeah, well, the celebration was, I can't believe I just scored against Mexico.
At one point, Parma, I think it's only like 224 players under contract.
Hey, they're going to throw me out of here, fellas. You're going to get me arrested on your show.
If you're a serious talent, you're going back and you're playing for Santos. You know, you're going back to play for, like, in Argentina for River Plate or Boca Juniors. Or you're going to...
Like the Ryan Giggs of old, he was more creative than any player on the pitch. He made Mata look stupid. He made Rooney look silly.
Now, the Premier League is what I think is probably the best marketed league without a question.
When you look at the draw for the Champions League, you kind of say, well, all the pieces kind of fell into place for everybody except City.
I am your host, Joe Uccello.
Sir Bob, Mike Orr. My co-host, Rob Rojas.
My trusted co-host, Ben the Machine.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to episode 172 of Low Limit Football on this 21st of August, 2017. I'm your host, Joe Uccello, and back after a great two-week vacation that saw me wear the Bianconeri jersey into the heart of the San Siro. Of course, I got a few hairy eyeballs for that one. Send a quick shout-out to my brother, Dave Klett, on his 43rd birthday today. You are getting old. And we are 298 days away from Russia 2018 as of this moment. We're almost done with the most expensive silly season in the history of world football. Are there any surprises left? But we are two full days into the full-blown start of the European 2017-2018 season. We are going to discuss this and a lot more with special guest Rosa Marairico from Soccer Legends Duma tonight. Rob Rojas, my trusted co-host, what is going on? How was your two-week vacation?
Oh, it was great. You know, catched up on a bit of sleep, you know, nothing, like you said, happening. I don't think it has been a crazy summer transfer window, don't you think? We finally escaped our line of totality.
That's right. That's right. For those of us in the United States, we had ourselves a little bit of a solar eclipse today, which, of course, sent everybody in the world into a frenzy. Keep in mind that the actual eclipse portion of it probably lasted, what, about 2.5 minutes, right? Blackout, and we're a full dose of it. We got like a 62, 63% blackout here. But it did dim the skies a little bit for a couple of hours here in Connecticut, and... you know, it was cool. And like you and I were talking, there is another bigger eclipse coming up in 2024 here in the northeast corner. That's going to see a 92% blockage in the sun. So that one won't get the hype that this one got because this one was coast to coast. But that one will definitely be much, much darker than what we saw today. So still fun times. You know, it's funny. Like I said, you know, I just spent the last 2 weeks in Italy. I got the closest I got to Coverciano was a sign in Florence, but I did go do the stadium tour at the San Siro with my my brand new Juventus jersey. I didn't wear my Bonucci Juventus jersey. I'd have gotten plenty of laughs at that one.
Is it true that you went in because they accept greatness?
Well, they recognized greatness.
Okay. That,
you know, and of course I was there, so I got a great picture of me. Sitting in my jersey in the AC Milan locker room, which I'll post up on the Twitter handle, you know, sometime in the next day or so. And I was gonna write up a quick little ditty about it and post it on our website, you know, sometime in the next week. I did use that picture though to bribe Aaron West into doing our Serie A preview. So you know, might as well mention that tonight. Tonight we're going through with our regular show, Rob, that you and I normally do, but what we're going to do is our This Week in Football label we are going to use over the next 2 weeks to preview the five major leagues that we cover, starting with tomorrow night and the Serie A with special guest Aaron West. who I'm really, really excited to talk to about previewing the Serie A, which kicked off this weekend, as well as Spain kicked off this weekend and the Bundesliga kicked off this weekend. So we are, like I said, we are two full-blown days into the start of the season. And, you know, what did you think so far? I mean, I thought it was pretty good. I thought it was a pretty good opening weekend. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I would say so. I would think in the Premier League, we saw a bit of surprises, like Chelsea losing to Burnley. We saw Manchester United go on a perfect two-game winning streak. I think in Germany, it's kind of a bit of the norm, and it's very early to determine anything yet. Same thing in La Liga, and definitely same thing in Serie A. So it's I guess it's a bit of the norm, the status quo for the moment. But just watching these games and looking at how entertaining teams are already been refreshed, how they all look and everything, it's just, yeah, I think this is going to be one of the most interesting European seasons in a long time.
Yeah, and especially leading into a World Cup with the transfer window that we've had, it's just nothing but magic, you know, starting out, and I think we're going to get a lot of that moving through. I've got to say, newcomer to Paris, Neymar, on the weekend, he was ultra impressive. And if you get a chance to watch the last 10 minutes of the PSG Toulouse match from yesterday, probably going to be three of the prettiest goals you're going to see in succession all year long. Just some amazing, amazing stuff to close out that match in a 6-2 win for PSG. You know, he's gotten off to a great start. I thought Paulo Dybala at Juventus got off to a great start to open the season. He looked pretty impressive. He looked like he was in mid-season form. You know, Mauro Icardi with a brace on the weekend, he looked like he did pretty well. How about the kid in Germany, huh? That American, you know?
Yeah, you know, that yellow shirt.
He
was 22, I think is his number.
Yeah, so he went too bad this weekend, right?
No, not at all. No hype whatsoever.
Christian Pulisic opening the season for Borussia Dortmund with the first goal in the season and adding an assist to it. Man, he was on fire as well. He's making him forget about Ousmane Dembele real quick.
Ooh, and that's another interesting player that we need to talk about soon.
Oh, we definitely will. We're going to spend a couple minutes on transfers and stuff because there was the Kylian Mbappe stuff that came out that could become a huge domino if that one comes to fruition. So we'll see. We'll talk about that in a couple minutes. So,
right.
Before we get into our opening thoughts topic, which is actually transfer window related anyway, I've got a little bit of trivia.
All right, so
ready, and it's my turn. I saw this one pop across Twitter, and I managed to take a couple of screenshots while I was in Italy, so I could bring it to the show here tonight. So, rewinding back to the first match of the season in the EPL, and looking at Manchester United, Romelu Lukaku, obviously making his debut for Man United this season, scored a brace on his first match in the Red Devils jersey, correct?
Yes.
He is the fourth Man United player to score a double on his debut. Can you name the other three?
Whew. Go ahead.
I was going to say, of the three names,
yep.
Two of them are ultra, ultra recognizable. One of them still wears the red jersey on Man United. So you've got three names. You've got about 60 minutes, I'd say, to think about it. Right, Rob? 60, 70 minutes?
Something around those.
Yeah. So I'll repeat it again. Romelu Lukaku's the fourth Man United player to score a double on his debut. Can you name the other three? I believe I've just lost Rob. So let me go ahead and reconnect him here. Rob, do I have you back?
Sorry, I pressed that by accident.
Ah, so all right. So I just repeated the trivia question, so no big deal.
Yep.
We got about an hour. So, opening thoughts tonight is based on an article that came out in The Guardian. The Telegraph. Probably about a week and a half ago, Rob?
Yes.
And it suggests that the transfer window in the Premier League is going to shut down before the start of the season next year. Now, currently, we're, I believe, what, two matches in the EPL season?
Yes.
And we've got it. We're probably going to have, what, another two matches before they actually close this window in September. But there's
one weekend.
We're going to have one more weekend before they shut the window down. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But as we stand right now, we're going to have three matches before the actual close of the transfer window. This article in the Telegraph suggests, though, that they're going to close the transfer window before the close before the open of the season. And for me, I think if this would happen, it could, you know, ultimately seal the transfer window in all of Europe because of where all the money is currently in European football, being in the EPL. It looks like the representatives from the 20 clubs that are in the top flight in the Premier League are all on board to do this. So I guess, Rob, you know, just quickly to you, one, is this a good idea? Two, what do you think the effect will be?
I think it is a good idea. I think it creates a bit of parity within all the clubs. Obviously, all the top big clubs in the Premier League obviously have a financial advantage from the other, I would say, let's say 6-7 clubs with that financial advantage and 13 just there. I think it brings a bit parity, a bit of equality within each other, that it would have to be done on a specific day before the start of the season. And I think it just, it allows the teams to really, really focus on each other and to not stress out about a player going or a player leaving, you know, 2-3 games after the start of the Premier League. So I think it's a really good idea. I think we could definitely see this occur perhaps in all of Europe as well, because you have to remember, Joe, every league in Europe starts differently on a different day. You know, France started earlier, England started earlier, then Spain started on the same day, Italy started on the same day, Germany as well. So every league is different depending on the country and the start of the day. But, I mean, UEFA would have to really, really convince all the other leagues in the world, in the continent, mm-hmm. to have a transfer day deadline done on a certain day, and especially on the certain day that the league starts.
Sure, sure. You know, my suggestion, you know, initially is the fact that, like I said, all the money, you know, not all the money, but a lot of the money is in England. And because of that, once they close up shop, many teams would be less likely to sell, like, let's say, a big name moving forward. Because really, after that, you've got, what, maybe about 4 or 5 clubs in the world that are capable of really denting somebody's wallet. And we'll talk about that in a minute. You know, obviously, with PSG and the big moves they made this year, Juve, obviously, is a big one. You know, obviously, the two giants in Spain, obviously, Bayern Munich. So there's teams that will still kind of stir the pot in Europe, but not, you're going to lose a lot of the money. So I think a lot of the big names or the big moves won't happen. So you, in essence, close the window. You know, my other thought on the whole thing of closing that window early is it will create a greater focus in the preseason matches that you see. So now these Guinness Cups, these International Champions Cup matches, you see some of these world tours that some of these teams go on. Those will hold more importance, in my opinion, because managers will be a little more focused on what they're doing and what teams they put out on the pitch, and then deciding if they need to make a move. As we sit right now, you know, somebody like Pep Guardiola can sit there and look at today's match against Everton, say, oh, you know what, I think I need another midfielder. I think I need another defensive midfielder. And he can go to the top brass and go, okay, guys, we've got a week and a half here. Go find me a defensive midfielder that I can work with, okay? This is my wish list. Here you go. And he's two matches in, so he's got some kind of idea as to what his on his short-term wish list until the end of the window. Now he's got to take those matches that he's played in July and say, okay, this is what I've got as a team, so these are the pieces I think I need. Really be a little more analytical of what the team is in front of him moving forward so that he can get those last-minute pieces before they close the window and start the season.
And definitely he would have to think even faster in the situation, having to find the players quickly before the start of the season.
Sure. Now, you know, is this a good thing? I mean, for me, I think this is a good thing. I don't mind this. I would like to see uniformity in the close of the transfer window. One thing that drives me crazy is that, you know, window in Italy closes different from the window in England, which closes different from the window in Spain. I'd like to see uniformity, but I'd like to see it across the world. You know what I mean? That's for me, and I know it's tough to do that because the Mexican season runs different and MLS obviously runs different and that sort of thing. So we get different seasons and times. So I get that would be difficult, but I guess maybe in Europe, just to see a uniformity of the close of the transfer window. This way, you know, all leagues are on the same playing field, and then we can move forward. And you're not worried about England closing, so Spain runs up, you know, Real Madrid runs up to PSG and buys Neymar at the last minute or something stupid like that, you know what I mean? Where the English clubs don't get to be in on something like that. That, for me, is one thing I would like to see. If they're going to tweak the transfer window rules, that's a rule I'd like to see tweaked.
I agree. Yeah. I definitely agree.
So, you know what? Do you want to talk a little transfers now, or do you want to hold off on that and let's get to our interview?
We can go to our interview, I guess.
Let's do our interview. Okay. So last night, Rob and I had the pleasure of speaking with Rosa Marairico from Soccer La Duma, I believe, and I don't remember if I mentioned it in the interview. I think this is our first South African guest.
Yes.
Okay, so that's just another country checked off the list for us, which is, you know, pretty cool that we can start, you know, tallying these things. But we had a great interview, heavy on the Serie A stuff, but she was wonderful. And so I'd like to play that for you now. So without any further ado, joining us now on Low Limit Football from Soccer La Duma is Rosella Marairico. Rosella, how are you tonight?
Hi, I'm good, thanks, and yourselves?
Fantastic. Thank you for joining us. I'm pretty sure you are our first guest ever from South Africa, so that is another country that we've highlighted on the show. So, again, thanks for joining us. I do want to jump into the Milan questions. I know that you tend to be focused on Milan and all things Milan. So my first question is about Milan, and it's about the transfer window and what they've done so far. Basically, AC Milan has been in the top five in overall spending in this transfer market. It's been well documented, the amount of players they've brought in. But in the other teams in the top five, such as Manchester City, where they've spent primarily on defense, which was really their Achilles heel last year, and PSG, which has really spent all their money on one player so far, although the Kylian Mbappe rumors are floating out there and they may spend a lot more, Milan has really done it across the board. They've done it in all aspects of the pitch, except, I guess, for goaltending, which they resolved the Gigio Donnarumma situation much earlier in the window. So my question to you is, is Milan done, are they done reshaping this new AC Milan, or are we going to see maybe one or two more moves over the next couple of weeks that will finalize what Milan has done in this summer transfer window?
Well, to start off with, obviously, I think Milan have done some incredible business. As you said, they've gone across the board, and they have brought in signings that have been really smart tactical signings, because in order to compete in Europe and European football with the Europa League and in the Coppa Italia and the Serie A, we needed a team with depth. Excuse me. And last season, we didn't really have that. We did well, considering, you know, Montella got the players to play beyond their abilities, but they definitely needed depth. And that's what they've gone and done, where they've signed in reinforcements in the midfield. They've reinforced in defense, particularly, obviously, with Musacchio, Rodriguez and Bonucci coming in, with Bonucci being obviously a massive, massive signing. And then on top of it, Donnarumma staying, which will definitely build the morale of the team. But I don't think they're quite finished. They're finished quite yet. I do believe that Kalinic will be coming in for a medical on Monday. And I think that will help reinforce the striking department. Obviously, we brought in Andre Silva and Cutrone, who's come in from the academy. Cutrone has been very, very promising in the preseason, having scored quite a few goals and having come in on the back of a Primavera season where he is actually the highest scoring Primavera player in the history of the academy, which is very positive. Andre Silva off the back of a fantastic season where I think he scored 22 goals as well. So that'll be very exciting, but they're young. And they're relatively inexperienced in Serie A, obviously, having with Cutrone only having played previously once. So Kalinic will be coming in and will bring in that much-needed Serie A experience. And I think that will be, you know, pretty good wrap up Milan's transfer season so far. I think so.
Okay, now one question, because we do know that the team has become much younger. Is Montella the right coach, or do you think Milan's next step, maybe not this year, or depending on how this year goes, is to replace Montella, or is Montella the right guy for this young side?
Well, last year he had the youngest team in Serie A, and he managed to get Milan to qualify in European football for the first time in 4 years. So and he did really, really well. And what I like about Montella, particularly for a young squad, is that he's very good at man managing. And he, being a relatively young coach himself, he does understand and he relates to the players a lot more, where as opposed to, you know, if someone like Lippi or Capello would have been in that position. Granted, they are fantastic coaches, but I think being a young coach with a younger squad actually relates a lot better. With Montella now, I think he will be a great coach for this season. I definitely think he will do well with the team. He's built a very strong team now. He's a lot more depth and quality at his disposal this term. Having looked at what he achieved last season, winning the Coppa Italia, you know, finishing in sixth place and qualifying for Europa League, I think that he'll do really well this year, and he'll probably possibly be pushing for that top four position.
Ah, okay. Rob, I want to turn it over to you for your question, so take it away.
Yeah, absolutely. One team that I do want to talk about now is the brothers of AC Milan, is Inter. You know, last season they went through, I guess, a roller coaster ride. They went through three managers and ended up finished seventh in Serie A, where they couldn't qualify for any of the European competitions. They go into this new season with a new manager, a really good manager, Luciano Spalletti. But they've done a bit of business, but nothing compared to what their neighbors have been doing. So do you feel that Inter still need to get something done in order to contend, not only, I guess, for the league, but to even finish above AC Milan?
You know, I think Inter, we saw them last year, as you mentioned, that they, or last season, they had a roller coaster ride. And before the season even started, they sacked Roberto Mancini and brought in Frank de Boer, which didn't really work out. He left after a couple of weeks at Inter. But they did spend big that last transfer window. They spent something like 175 million euros. Mm-hmm. And that has obviously carried over to this year. This year they've spent very cautiously, and they haven't brought in many big changes, but the changes that they have brought in, I think, are a lot more thought through, and there was a lot more consideration that's gone behind them. And someone like Boya Valero having come in, I think he'll do very well in commanding the midfield. And since Cambiaso's left, there hasn't really been anyone that can fill that type of role. And when you look at the squad like João Mario, Gagliardini and Perisic, they are three players who really they haven't met their full potential yet. And I think if Spalletti, who's, as we know, is a fantastic coach, if he can get them to start playing to the best of their abilities and get the new signings to fit in, I think they could do really well. And they could possibly even push, you know, for going back into Champions League now with Champions League Italy having four spots available. They could be contending for the top four spot and could be possibly giving Milan a good rivalry once again.
Absolutely. And I think it's something we haven't seen in quite a while, where Milan and Inter dominated mostly, not only within themselves, but also in all of Serie A. So it'd be really interesting if we could see that, especially this season. Looking at a team who did qualify for the European competitions above Milan, above Inter, above Lazio, Fiorentina, and so on, is Atalanta. You know, they're in the Europa League group stage, I believe, this year. They got rid of a few key players like Andrea Conti, who went to Milan, and Francese, who also went to Milan. So looking forward, do you feel that they still have the right team to contend and to go far in the Europa League and even have another sensational season in Serie A?
You know, last season, very few expected Atalanta to do what they did. And I think they had an incredible campaign. Of course, they had a lot of great talents at their disposal, namely, obviously, you mentioned Kessie and Conti. With them having gone, it will be very interesting to see how they adapt. I know they did bring in Ilicic, was a very good signing, but he's very inconsistent at the same time, so he'll need to improve in that regard. Also, another thing that they'll be worrying about for the next 2 weeks until the transfer window closes is Spinazzola's fate. Will, you know, Juventus want him back? He's on loan from Atalanta to Juventus under a two-year deal, but Atalanta don't want to let him go, and rightly so. They've got Europa League football that they want to play in and they want to compete in. So it will be very interesting, and it will be interesting to see how they juggle the two competitions as well. I don't think they will do as well, but you know, the fact that they managed to keep Papu Gomez, who was rumored to go to Roma, he signed a contract extension will definitely, you know, be a huge morale booster and will have big psychological impact, along with him being able to play and keep that continuity up front with Petagna will be very, very crucial. So I think, you know, it would be very interesting, but they might not they did last season, possibly.
Right, and it's going to be hard to try to replicate and expect more than what you wanted to get last season. So it's going to be interesting, and I can't wait to see what happens. And moving now to Juventus, the champions, what do you expect now from, I guess, Paulo Dybala's third season at Juventus, especially now with the intense pressure of now wearing the famous number 10 jersey for Juventus?
Yes, of course. Obviously, Dybala having inherited that jersey, it carries a lot of weight with the likes of Del Piero and Platini having previously worn it before him. I do feel that Juventus wouldn't have given it to him if he wasn't ready to carry that weight. And I do think it also silences the rumors of him, you know, the rumors that were linking him to Barcelona. And he, but Dybala and the Juventus fans also probably agree with this, that they feel he can become a legend at that team. And he proved again on Saturday night, you know, he scored a beautiful goal that I feel like he fits in so well with that team and the understanding and the dynamics of that club. And Serie A football suits him beautifully. Like he moves around excellently within that squad. You can see him moving to the side. Yesterday he was changing with Cuadrado on the flank and then cutting in down the middle, scoring on set pieces. I think this season he will probably even do better than the last two seasons with Juventus. I think he's going to just flourish into the player that he is. His confidence is high, and the team work for him, and I think he'll really do well.
Absolutely, and you look at the age of him the player. He's only 23 years old, so definitely still not even into the prime of his career yet. So if we're expecting big things out of him, then the amazing things that we see of him now. Who knows what we'll be seeing him in the next coming year. So I'm really excited about that. And just my last question, Rosie, and thank you again for coming on. Obviously from your native country in South Africa, I guess was known all over the world ever since the World Cup in 2010. And now we look, I guess, a big change of the sport happening ever since that. What do you think has happened for the sport of soccer after the World Cup? You know, how big of an impact did that World Cup have to the country? And a second part question: they're also in contention for the 2018 World Cup in a group with Burkina Faso, Senegal, and Cape Verde. Do you believe that they have the team to qualify for the tournament in Russia?
Well, you know, soccer or football in South Africa is one of the biggest following sports in the country. Cricket and rugby do a lot better. We succeed a lot better in terms of international performances in that way, as opposed to soccer or football. But the passion in the country for football and for PSL, which is our league here, is the Premier Soccer League, it's massive. And the fans, they live and they breathe the game. And bringing the World Cup to South Africa in 2010 only just improved that following. And the stadiums that we now have, they're iconic. I mean, I live in Cape Town Stadium, is right in front of my doorstep. And it's a legacy and a history that brought such a unity and colorfulness to the country. And it's only just elevated football in the country and put South Africa on the map in the world, you know, in terms of football. And in terms of qualifying for the World Cup, you know, we've just employed Stuart Baxter as our head coach. Now, they're having won everything as the Chiefs of Africa's team and has finished off Saturday on the Telkom Nom. Then back in 2003-2004. So he understands the local game and he's very successful in it. I think with him on board, and if he can bring in a lot of the players that are playing, South Africans that are playing overseas. So for example, we've got Kamohelo Mokotjo, who's playing in Brentford now in England. Joel Untersee, who's actually owned by Juventus, he came through the Primavera Academy. He still hasn't found his team yet, but he's South African born. So there's been rumors that Baxter might be going after him. And there's a few others like Lars Veldtveit, who's playing in Holland with Groningen. And they'll be coming through to Bafana, hopefully. So if he can combine a nice balance between local players and players that have that European experience, a big game mentality experience, I think South Africa and Bafana have a very good chance of qualifying for the World Cup.
And South Africa, I mean, Africa in general, in terms of quality, is one of the toughest places to qualify because when we get down to these final five teams and their group stages, it's really just the top team that goes through to Russia 2018. So it will certainly be something to keep an eye on. Rosa, I want to jump back into the conversation and want to go back over to Juventus real quick. I have a quick question about them. Last year, when we watched Juventus play, especially when they transitioned from defense to attacking, they did it through Leo Bonucci, who now is at AC Milan. In their first match this weekend against Cagliari, you saw them do it a little bit more through Claudio Marchisio and Miralem Pjanic in that defensive midfield role, and then even in through Sami Khedira once he came on for Marchisio later in the match. Is that going to be the new look Juventus tactically, or do we think maybe Juventus tries to find a better foot playing center back? And the reason I ask that question is because Daniele Rugani, who did play well defensively on the weekend, left quite a bit to be desired with his feet and his passing capabilities. I'm sure it's something that they'll be working on, and he's still young. But do they look more towards Mehdi Benatia moving through the season, or are they going to possibly look and maybe add another center back before the end of the window?
Yeah, I think they are going to try to add another center back. I think they will need some extra cover. Obviously, you know, the defenders that you just do have at this Benatia is also going on with age. So I do think generally in terms of the competitions you want to play, competing at the highest level, and your age factor, you want to bring in someone who's younger, who's versatile, because injuries will creep in possibly with those players. We did see Chiellini struggle quite a bit, and Barzagli has lost a lot of pace. So I do definitely think they'll be bringing someone in the middle there. And in terms of obviously that Bonucci played such a crucial role for Juventus in defence, and as you mentioned, bringing the ball forward. So I do think, you know, Allegri will want to look for someone who can have that kind of capability where that Bonucci had with playing the long ball forward. But if he can't, he'll definitely rely on the likes of Pjanic and Marchisio, like we saw against Cagliari. The question is whether Pjanic can keep up his form, you know, can become and maintain consistency, and whether Marchisio can remain fit. We saw a lot of the time Marchisio suffered with many, many injuries. And when he's on form, he's a marvel to watch. He's absolutely beautiful on the field. And I do hope for his sake that he has a season where he can be fit and, you know, finally command that midfield like he deserves. Whereas Khedira also, you know, he's also had the suffering with a few injuries and going on in age two. So it will be very, very interesting. But Allegri does know what he wants. And I think a lot will be weighed around the fact of what happens with Spinazzola. Mm-hmm. But we'll see how that works out. And Caldada, for that matter, obviously Caldada also being a Juventus own player who's on loan.
Sure.
So it'll be very interesting to see. But Allegri will decide if he can't find someone who can play that ball playing role like Bonucci did, he'll sort it out and move it to the midfield. He's a very tactically advanced coach. He's grown so, you know, he's grown immensely since having coached Milan up into Juventus. And I think, you know, Juventus will still be the favorites to take the Scudetto title.
That's a great last statement because it leads into my last question. Obviously, Juve's won the last six. You know, everyone knows that quite well. But for some reason this year, we're seeing a lot of the pundits actually pick Napoli to be the Scudetto winners at the end of the year. And when you look at what Napoli's done in this transfer window, other than add Nikola Maksimovic, they haven't really made any moves. So why are people looking at Napoli and thinking that they're going to be the next Scudetto winner?
Well, I think Napoli's strength lies in their continuity. Having carried over the same team from last season to this season will be immense for them. And obviously we saw them play some of the most beautiful football in the peninsula last season. And I think Sarri is going to, having maintained that continuity, is definitely going to be the strongest asset. Having Dries Mertens the way he was scoring last season can continue it now would be phenomenal. We saw Insigne play the most crucial, beautiful pass yesterday for Ghoulam to score that goal, and it was absolutely incredible. If Milic is fit, once he regains his fitness after coming back from that long injury he saw at the beginning of last season, you know, when Milic got injured, Sarri had to readjust his whole setup and his whole team, and they found a winning method after that. Now he can start the season knowing that, you know, Napoli can play with and without Milic and they will still go on fine. And I think that continuity there is going to be very crucial, and that puts them above the rest of the other Serie A candidates that to compete with Juventus.
I agree 100%, especially now that these players will be in their second year together and there aren't many changes. I also agree about the fact that Milic, before he had that knee injury and which ended his season, was really starting to score goals at will. So if he can regain that form that he ended last season with abruptly, I think they will be one of the toughest teams to handle. And not only in the Serie A, but even, you know, looking forward into Champions League, because that team, if you remember correctly, without Milic, they gave Real Madrid a little difficulty in the first halves of both legs of their knockout stage matches. So we'll have to see if they can turn it around. But the Serie A season is always grueling. It's long, and it's extremely competitive, especially with the Milan clubs improving. You know, you had the upstart Atalanta, who managed to hold on to a few pieces. And obviously, Juve, Roma are all there, so I think it will be a tough challenge. Do you think Juve will be that Scudetto winner and tack on their seventh trophy?
I do. I see very little stopping Juventus. You know, I think they're such a well-oiled team. Everything runs perfectly within that club. You know, Allegri, as I said, has grown immensely as a coach. His players are so well-adjusted. They understand each other. They can play each other on the field with their eyes closed. They know each other so well. And I think that's so crucial. And behind the scenes, everything is stable within the club. And I think that plays a lot bigger role than most people realize. Obviously, we've seen the likes of Milan and Inter, when things aren't going well behind the scenes, what it can do to a team. So I do think Juventus, with this, you know, with having a great backroom staff, having a great coach and a solid, solid team, with depth and quality, I definitely think that they'll definitely be going for that seventh trophy.
I hope you're right, Roselle. I do want to thank you for joining us on the show tonight. We've really enjoyed the conversation and look forward to having you back again soon.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
And that was Roselle Marairico from Soccer La Duma in South Africa joining us for a great conversation that we were able to bring to you tonight. So. You know, Rob, obviously we're going to dive into Serie A much deeper when we get on with Aaron West and do our preview. But just your initial thoughts on whatever you saw this weekend from matchups. We saw really the big teams win. All of the big teams win. Napoli won 3-1. Roma 1-0. Inter, Milan, and Juventus all winning with 3-0 victories. You know, your thoughts on how that season's kicked off so far?
I mean, I think it's typical. I was very impressed by Inter, honestly, giving a really good and convincing win against a Fiorentina side who, you know, proved to be a good side last season, although they did have a lot of key departures and they did get in players such as, you know, like Giovanni Simeone, for example. They weren't able to capitalize on that. I think we have to give a bit of a shout out to Spal, the newly promoted Spal, who drew Lazio yesterday.
Yeah,
that's something very good.
Absolutely, it's an impressive way to start the season for them. You know, it gives you hope because between Spal, Benevento, and Hellas Verona, you start to wonder about who's going to survive, and you start to look at Benevento and Spal looking at, I believe, Benevento, this is their first time ever in the Serie A.
Yes.
And Spal is their first time in like 50 years. So you almost expect a one and done out of both those teams. But Spal, you know, I know it's only one match. I know it's early, but kind of a nice thing to see that maybe they'll upset the apple cart a little bit and stick around for a year or two.
Here's their next five matches, just to give them a bit of hope.
Okay.
Udinese, Inter, Cagliari, Milan, Napoli.
Yeah, they better steal the points against Cagliari and Udinese, or else, because I think it's going to be slim pickings on the other three matches, that's for sure.
Hey, maybe they could draw. Maybe they draw all three, five of them.
You never know. I mean, they did draw.
Or they win.
They drew the Supercoppa champions, right?
Right.
So I guess there is hope. So, Rob, let's do a couple of quick little transfer rumors floating around right now. These are, from what I can find, these are almost done deals to the point where they're up on the Telegraph's transfer tracker. I'm sorry, the Guardian's transfer tracker. Uh-huh. And two Italian, well, one Italian club, two players. Looks like they're going to be sending Jeffrey Condogbia to Valencia for, looks like almost 25 million pounds. And in return, coming back is going to be Joao Cancelo from Valencia to Inter for 32 million pounds. Mm-hmm. For me, are you surprised they're giving up on Condogbia so quickly to be sending him off to Valencia?
I think so, too. I don't think we saw much of him perform for Inter. Mm-hmm. But this is a loan, right? Or is it a transfer?
No, they're calling it a transfer here.
Oh. Well, I mean, I guess he didn't impress as much as people expected. I mean, I liked him when I saw him play, but I guess...
I liked him,
but
too.
If you don't, yeah, I guess, like you said, Joe, something that you always say, what have you done for me lately?
Right, exactly. And I think that's, you combine that statement with the fact that there's a new head coach in Inter with Spalletti taking over, and maybe he's just not one of Spalletti's types of guys, and this is kind of what they're looking for. But I think some pretty good value on him getting 24 million. I think they might be overpaying slightly on Cancelo. But the fact that he's young, I think I just looked him up a minute ago. I think he's 23 years old. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm 23 years old. So certainly got a bright future ahead of him as a right back. He might be that nice piece. But having said that, I've got to say that Inter to me was impressive this weekend. I think they flew a little under the radar, but impressive in the fact that they did beat a decent Fiorentina side. 3-0 in that one. So, speaking of Fiorentina, they've shipped off their top scorer last year, Nikola Kalinic, to Milan on a loan.
Yep.
So we saw that happen today. A couple other moves happened. Samir Nasri, Manchester City's finally rid of that player. I guess I'll be nice. He was never really impressive under City, and they sent him off to Adelanspor for 3.7 million pounds. Obviously, you know, because we've been away for a couple of weeks, the big move was the Neymar move, right?
Yes.
222 million euro sent off to PSG from Barcelona. They finally, you know, after weeks of being a rumor and a discussion and a possibility and a potential, became a move. And now it sounds like there's going to be a little bit of a domino effect because what I saw earlier today is PSG is now preparing, I believe it was a 160 million pound offer for Kylian Mbappe at Monaco. So now, I guess that thing is actually serious. But with that happening, there is a huge potential that one of the articles that I read, there's huge potential for Monaco to turn that money around and go get Andrea Belotti and activate his $100 million buyout clause from Torino and bring the striker into to Monaco, which he would kind of fit the mold of Monaco, being a young player, dynamic, goal-scoring, prolific, you know, that kind of stuff. Let me ask you this, Rob, you know, because Mbappe did not feature on the weekend for Monaco, which kind of hints at the fact that this is going to happen. But does Monaco make the move for Belotti, do you think? Or do you think they pocket the money here? Because Radamel Falcao, you know, first three matches, he scored 5 goals. He's the early leader for the top goal scorer in France.
I would say that they shouldn't at all. I think they should keep Mbappe for at least another few seasons, see how he does. You know, this was his first – last season was his first real season as a player, and he definitely showed a big impact for it, and it would be completely unwise for him to leave at such an early age, to be fair. Or to be honest, looking at that front four of PSG, or front three, you could say, it's going to be hard for him to to start, you know, over Cavani or playing alongside Neymar, Di Maria, anything like that. So I think it's a safe bet for him to stay at Monaco, battle it out for Liga, definitely battle it out in the Champions League, and move on from there. I think it could work in the long term, depending on what he does maybe this season or maybe after the World Cup, if he does go on that team, that we could indeed see a possible move for him going to another big club in Europe.
Yeah, I don't see the upside for him leaving pre-World Cup, okay? He's got all the benefits at Monaco right now that he would have at PSG, the right. Champions League. He's got a good team behind him. He has another striker he can play with who was excellent in Radamel Falcao. Good head coach. He's got all those little pieces that it doesn't make sense to upset the apple cart this window. He wants to go in the summer. He wants to go after the World Cup. Great. But you know what? Make the French national team. Go to the World Cup. Do what you can do, and then come back and then say, okay, I'll go to PSG, or I'll go to Barcelona, or I'll go to Real Madrid, you know, whoever offers the hundred millions of dollars that's going to be required to pry him away. Even if he has, Rob, I guess a subpar season compared to last year, I think the money is still going to be there. You know, I don't think Monaco need to sell him. I don't think they need the cash. They're certainly flush with cash right now. I don't think he needs to be sold because I think that money's coming to him as well. So, I think it would be unwise to jump ship this early. Interesting that they would bring up Belotti so fast. Obviously, you know, I didn't even go back and look and see how he did on the weekend. I didn't hear that he scored, so I'm going to assume he didn't score. But again, I didn't see. Yeah, I was just checking at it myself as well. Torino ended up drawing 1-1 this weekend.
He didn't score, Pjanic.
He did not score. Okay, so yeah, that's right. Jalic scored the goal for them. So, you know, from that standpoint, I don't even know that Belotti should be leaving because, again, same idea. Young striker, the money will be there. You know, he's going to get plenty of offers from Juventus. He's going to get plenty of offers from the big clubs. Why upset the apple cart going into the World Cup? It's kind of the same idea for me.
It's a really bad situation to be in.
Yeah.
Because you know, some players who have, I guess, the decency, I guess the braveness to move before a World Cup year. For example, Neymar did that in 2013 when he left for Santos to go to Barcelona. Now he does this to go to PSG. It's a big risk. But when you're talking about players who are potentially going to be starting for their national team, a big national team, you know.
Yeah.
Mbappe probably starting for France or Belotti starting for Italy, you know. You cannot afford to take risks that could end up hurting you in the end.
You know, I think as far as Neymar goes, it would have. I agree with you on the risk coming from Santos to Barcelona. You know, obviously moving into Europe, totally different style of footballing. I mean, just he's young. There's so many issues with moving at that time that I do agree that is a risk. I don't believe a player of Neymar's caliber at this point where we know what we've got with him, I don't feel like this year in this move is a risk for him. Because Neymar could have the worst season in the history of his career, right? He's still going to start and captain for the Brazilian national team. There's no way he gets left off. That would be the same as if Lionel Messi went from Barca to Man City.
Manchester City, yeah.
You know, that could happen, and he would move in a World Cup year, but who is leaving Lionel Messi off their national team, regardless of the season he has at Manchester City or regardless of the season he has at Barca this year? They just those players, and there's not many of them, man. There's like 6, 7, 8 players that transcend that class or that characteristic. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I don't think Mbappe is that kid yet. Okay. I think he could potentially have a miserable season at PSG and then Didier Deschamps looks at him and goes, you know what? I've got Giroud. I've got Lacazette who's doing well at Arsenal. I've got Gignac who is playing well at Tigres.
Griezmann.
You know, I've got so many strikers that I don't need Mbappe. So why bring him? And I don't need an Mbappe who is out of form. So I think for Mbappe, it's a much riskier proposition. But I think for a guy like Neymar, I don't think it's a risk at all. I think.
But Joe, let me play devil's advocate. Sure. Sorry for interrupting. But if you're the Deschamps,
okay,
would you take him on the World Cup squad?
Right now, yes, absolutely.
Mbappe.
Yes, right now, today, yes.
If he doesn't have the same season at the end of next year, do you still take him?
I can't say. And the only reason I can't say is because you've got to see how the other players played. Right. Now, let's say Mbappe was subpar, right?
Right.
But Lacazette only scored 3 goals for Arsenal.
Right. And Gignac scores 30 at Tigre.
Exactly.
Or Kingsley Coleman scores a bunch for Bayern.
Yeah.
Or Kevin Gamero, anyone like that.
Yeah, now you've got to look at those players. I mean, the issue here is that Deschamps has a wealth of strikers right now. He's got 7-8 guys that he could pick, including Mbappe.
And to pick only 23 names from that team, it's going to be hard enough.
Some of those players, I mean, we're gonna do a World Cup show. We're going to look at France, and we're going to say, I can't believe Deschamps left player X off the team.
Mm.
You know, I think a guy like Pogba, no matter, let's say Paul Pogba has last year's Man United season. I think he's one of those players that when Deschamps looks at everything at the end of the day, he goes, I have to have Paul Pogba on my team no matter what.
Right.
Okay.
Even if, no matter how bad of a season he is.
No matter how bad of a season he had. But I don't think the perception is the same with Mbappe because of the depth of strikers that France has. So there's no plus side. Right now, all Kylian Mbappe can do is repeat last season. If he does that, he'll go to the World Cup. I think if he repeats what he did last year, I don't think Deschamps can look at him and go, I have to leave him home. I don't think he can do that. But when you make that move and you upset the apple cart on an 18-year-old, there is great potential for that to happen. And I think that there's, you know, Mbappe could be his own worst enemy at that point.
Hmm. You know, so. And it takes one single mistake or something to happen to ruin that all. I mean,
sure.
I mean, listen, if he gets injured, you know, that's going to send alarm bells all over the world.
Of course. I mean, you know, and injuries aren't something you're going to be able to control. I mean, look at Zlatan Ibrahimovic, you know.
Right.
And
injuries at this point of your career, if you're going to try to make that World Cup team,
yeah,
you're going to have to really, really look at it differently.
You know, and you do bring up a good point, too, with the injuries, because think about it. Now, if you go to PSG from Monaco, you have a different physio. You have different ways of training. You have different things that you do.
Right.
You know, so not saying that would induce an injury, but there is, you start to increase the risk, even though what they do at PSG fitness wise may be better than what they do at Monaco. And I don't know, I'm not privy to the information. In the end, if you change it, then you open yourself up to that risk. So I think in the end, I don't think it's a good idea for him to move at all.
Right.
And at the same token, although we've been Mbappe focused, Belotti's kind of in the same boat. There's plenty of strikers at the Italian national team side between Insigne. You've got Graziano Pelle, which remember he still exists.
Balotelli.
Yeah, he still exists. And if he repeats what he did last year at Nice, you could potentially see him. Ciro Immobile.
Javier Diabiadini scored the other day.
Exactly. I mean, there's plenty of players there where Belotti makes a move, has a terrible season, gets injured, any of those things, and all of a sudden you're not looking at Andrea Belotti and he misses his chance as well. So
I think I'm sorry, John, I just want to say one more thing. I think one other player and one other national team that we really need to focus on, and we hope that he has a really good season in order for him to go to the World Cup, is Alvaro Morata.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you brought him up, because Alvaro Morata is in a unique position right now. An extremely unique position, because the guys that he's fighting to get onto that national team side to go to the World Cup for Spain includes one Diego Costa, who at the moment has not played a lick of football, and is still an ongoing saga with Chelsea. Now, you could almost see the way Diego Costa's handled this a little bit. You could almost see, out of spite, Chelsea go, you know what? Yeah, we're not sending you anywhere. Why don't you go sit on the beach for a year? You know,
go back to Brazil for
4 months. Well, he can't go anywhere; he's under contract. So he's a player in limbo. Do you know what I mean? He's he's out. So all he can do is sit around and train personally and train individually and then pray.
Just wait.
Yeah, pray in the winter window that Chelsea says, you know what? Okay, fine. We'll send you somewhere.
And if not?
Then if not, then he's sitting out for a year. Right? Yep. I mean,
until January.
Well, yeah, until January. But I mean, he could sit out till January. But if in January Chelsea doesn't move him,
now can't do anything about it.
Exactly, and now you're leading into a World Cup year where your team that you play for, Alvaro Morata, did you a favor on the national team level. Think about
and
that.
And another one like Pedro as well.
Sure, absolutely. So there's, you know,
other players that are. That are in that same position, you know, like Vitolo. Yeah.
And sorry for the technical difficulties there. But I'm sorry, Rob, where were we when we just got dropped off there?
Yeah, we were talking about how Diego Costa, you know, in this situation where he's not getting any playing time, you're really starting to stress out because of the immense competition that you're having, like, you know, De La Feo, Iago Aspas, Vitolo, Lucas Vasquez, Nolia. Hey, even a guy like Marco Asensio, who's been out of this world in these last few days.
Yes,
so that's another one that you should be a bit worried about.
Absolutely. So I think, you know, how do you see, I mean, let's talk about that for a second. How do you see the Diego Costa situation panning out? Do you think he gets moved, or you think really Chelsea's got that bitter bone in their body and says, you know what, sit on the bench?
I mean, if Conte doesn't want him, then why bother with trying to worry about him? I think he should leave.
Yeah, you know, the problem is that the dirty laundry's out in the open right now. And right. And what that does is that lowers the price tag. So, you know, I think Diego Costa came out and said that the only place he wants to go to play is Atletico Madrid. And I get it, but at this point, you know, Atletico's going to say, we'll offer you $20 for the guy. And Conte's going to say, no, we want $20 million. And because the dirty laundry's out there, you're not going to get full value for him. So you wonder if they just if they kind of say, you know what, we'll let him sit and we'll move him in the January window.
Mm.
So let's move on. Let's you know, obviously we don't have any matches to review, Rob, because, you know, as we last left off, we were heading out on vacation. But we do have matches of the week, and now we're back in business where we've got matches of the week to offer in every single league that we cover. So yeah. I'm going to turn it back over to you to give us our match of the week this week.
Yeah, absolutely. And to start out the new season, our match of the week is going to be Real Madrid against Valencia Sunday at 4:15 p.m. At the Santiago Bernabeu. Real Madrid, I know, won this game over the weekend against Deportivo La Coruña. They will be without Cristiano Ronaldo for their next two games, I want to say. Because the first game was the Super Copa second leg, and this game yesterday.
Yeah.
So yeah, they'll be taking on Valencia, who also won over the weekend against Las Palmas. I think we're gonna see probably another win here for Real Madrid, unless Valencia could really prove a surprise here under their new manager. I think Real Madrid should win this Cristiano Ronaldo-less 2-1. I'm gonna say.
Yeah, you know, obviously missing Ramos, missing Cristiano is gonna be a little tougher, but you've got to think that that they have a much better team overall across the board than Valencia. Mm-hmm. Valencia obviously had a horrible season last year, but have made some moves here in the window, like we just talked about, especially with Condogbia, mm-hmm. where they're looking to try and improve on things. So we'll have to.
Yep, they got players like Gabriel Barbosa from Arsenal and Jason Murillo from Inter. So yeah, they definitely look like a new look young team.
Yeah, so that, you know, obviously promising things going on there. Let's head over to France real quick, where obviously the French season has just kicked off. Actually kicked off much earlier. We've got three teams currently perfect on the season. PSG, Monaco, and Saint-Étienne have won their first three matches. Saint-Étienne actually have not conceded a goal as of yet in this young season. But our match of the week is going to match up a couple of these top teams in Monaco against Marseille. Marseille, two wins and a draw. Their draw actually coming against Angers on the weekend, but previously beating Nantes 1-0 and beating Dijon 3-0. This is a new look Marseille with a couple of moves that they've made in the, you know, in the off season. But Monaco obviously have been dismantled a little bit, and it hasn't really affected them, seeing that they've scored 8 goals in their first 3 matches, inspired by Radamel Falcao and 5 goals in his first 3 matches. So I am going to take Monaco to win this one 2-0 at home. I think they're still continuing on. This match is Sunday at 3 p.m., by the way. And I think Monaco is going to be, even though they've been a little dismantled by the transfer window this summer, I think they're going to compete for that title again. Just going to be interesting to see how well they do against PSG, who is completely lighting it up, 11 goals in their first 3 matches. So we'll go from there. So, Rob, over to you for the EPL, sir, for Liverpool. I'll let you give the rest of it. Sorry about that.
Yeah, you gave one part of it. It's Liverpool against Arsenal Sunday at 11 a.m. Both teams are coming off, I believe it's a win. Yeah, both teams are coming off from, well, actually, no, sorry, let me rephrase that. Liverpool coming from a win against Crystal Palace, but Arsenal are coming off a loss from Stoke, courtesy of a goal from Jesse Rodriguez. So pressure's on Arsenal more than Liverpool, to be honest. The game is going to be at Anfield, so definitely going to be interesting to see there. But I think we've seen Arsenal really demonstrate their potential in the first game against Leicester. And I think it's going to be repeated again in this really good game against Liverpool. Time will tell what's going to happen with the situation with Coutinho, if he stays, if he goes, or anything along those lines. It's really affected them a little bit moving forward. So I am going to take a 1-1 draw on this one.
Nice. That should be certainly one of the better matches on the weekend. Now, just before we jump into the Serie A match of the week, I just saw a tweet come over from NBC Sports reporting that PSG could get Kylian Mbappe and Fabinho from Monaco for Lucas Moura. And what they would do is they would loan Mbappe back out and then buy him in the summer. So, and that would be the way they would avoid financial fair play. Or at least any penalties from it. So that saga is going to go on, Rob, for at least another week for sure. And they're talking $260 million. I'm sorry, they spent $260 on Neymar, but they're talking about Fabinho and Kylian Mbappe altogether. So yeah. Let's move on to the Serie A, where we're going to see two undefeated teams match up in this one. And they are Roma versus Inter. This matchup is in the Stadio Olimpico in Rome on Saturday at 2:45 p.m. Roma coming off a 1-0 victory over Atalanta on the road, where, you know, there were moments where Atalanta looked like they were the better team. Inter, on the other hand, looked very, very good in their first win, 3-0 over Fiorentina that we talked about a little earlier. I think we're going to see an Inter win in this one, Rob. I'm going to take a 2-1 victory for Inter here. If we remember last year, I thought they started out decently last year and kind of fell apart as the De Boer era, you know, took over. But this team looks a little different to me. They look a little more inspired, and we'll have to see if Cancelo shows up in time to help them out in this one. But I do like the way Inter's playing. So I think they'll go through and win this 1-2-1 and give us our first road upset of the season in the Serie A. So over to you, my friend, for the Bundesliga.
Yes, the Bundesliga. We have Borussia Dortmund hosting Hertha Berlin. Borussia Dortmund are coming off, as we mentioned early in the show, a 3-0 victory against Wolfsburg. Hertha Berlin are also coming off a win, 2-0 over Stuttgart. I think we have to take the Dortmund side, you know, looking at how impressive they've been, even with or without Osama Dembele. You know, if we see another lights-out performance from Christian Pulisic or Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, then they could definitely contend for this Bundesliga title. And give Bayern, I think, hopefully, a really, really close challenge in this one. I'm going to say 2-0 Dortmund.
2-0 Dortmund. That's going to be a good one to watch, too. So, last match of the week that we're going to talk about tonight is our matchup in the MLS. And that is another battle of New York. New York Red Bull versus NYCFC. This is at Red Bull Arena Friday night at 7 p.m. on this one. Just taking a quick peek at this. Mike Grella currently has a knock, may not play. And Mararita for NYCFC will not play with a broken leg in this one. Looking at these two teams and their head-to-head so far this season, or over the last five, actually. NYCFC winning 3-2 against the Red Bull back on 8-6, which was August 6th. Before that, we had NYCFC taking a 2-0 victory on the 24th of June. And on the 14th of June, it was a 1-0 victory for the Red Bull. Red Bull had won three straight before that, but the last two in league, both NYCFCs to take. Currently, as far as the standings go with these two teams, you've got NYCFC on 46 points chasing what is potentially going to become a historic season for Toronto FC, and Bears watching if they can run across that finish line and then really put the exclamation point on it with the MLS Cup title. New York Red Bull are in fourth place currently. They lost their last match 2-0 at Portland. And NYCFC has won their last three straight, including 2-1 against the Revs on the weekend, beating the Galaxy on the road 2-0, and beating the aforementioned New York Red Bull 3-2 at home on the 6th of August. So I don't see any reason to not pick NYCFC in this one. They're really going to – I think in the end you're going to really see them challenge for that MLS Cup title. And depending on what's going on over in the Western Conference, you're probably going to see a big Eastern Conference final matchup between these two teams. Chicago Fire has fallen off the pace a little bit here. So really look like down the finish line, it is going to be Toronto NYCFC. So I'm going to take this as a 2-1 victory for NYCFC over the Red Bull. And we'll even put a David Villa goal in there just for laughs. Let's head over to the tables in MLS quickly and give you the rundown there, as we haven't been around for a couple weeks. This is anywhere between 23 and 26 matches played in MLS as we have the unbalanced schedule. Seattle Sounders in the Western Conference leading the way on 40 points, tied with Sporting KC. Third place, Houston Dynamo on 37, the Timbers on 37, FC Dallas in fifth place on 35, the Whitecaps on 34, and the San Jose Earthquakes just outside at 33 points. things are going to get really, really tight in that Western Conference in the top of the table. Real Salt Lake on 29 points, the Galaxy on 23, the Rapids on 22, and Minnesota United on 22 points for the top 11 in that league. Eastern Conference, Toronto FC, as we had mentioned before, 50 points. They are 4 points clear of NYCFC on 46 points, Chicago Fire on 41, the Red Bull on 38, Columbus Crew and Montreal Impact on 36 points each. Then 1 point behind them, Atlanta United just outside the playoff spots. Orlando City on 31, the Union on 30 in Philadelphia, the Revs on 29 points, and DC United last place 22 points. Top scorers in the league currently, David Villa on 19 goals, Nemanja Nikolic at the Chicago Fire on 16 goals, and we have Ignacio Piatti on 14, Diego Valeri on 14, and Bradley Wright Phillips at the Red Bull on 14 goals as well. So that is our week ahead for everybody. We've got a little bit of trivia answers coming up here, and then and really the sign out. So, Rob, would you like me to repeat the trivia question?
Absolutely, but I just have the breaking news here.
Yes,
coming from Twitter, it's that Uruguay and Argentina have officially announced their co-host bid to host the 2030 World Cup.
Oh wow! So that's going to be a trend now, huh? If we're going to expand this tournament to 48, 50, 60, 100 teams. It's going to take more than one country to run this tournament. So interesting to see if there are any challengers to them for that tournament.
I don't think it should, because, Uruguay hosted the first one 100 years ago. So it'd be on the 100th anniversary of the World Cup.
Right. Right. So that's important. So I think from that perspective, I think they should, Uruguay should be involved in the final. That's for sure. So
definitely.
All right. So let me give you the trivia question again, as we had breaking news there on Twitter. Romelu Lukaku, the fourth Man United player to score a double on his debut. Can you name the other three?
The first one I can remember off the top of my head is Marcus Rashford.
That is correct. He is one of them. I believe did it last year, correct?
Yes.
Yep. Two more.
Zlatan Ibrahimovic?
No.
Oof. Rooney.
No.
Dutch player. Ruud van Nistelrooy?
Correct. Ruud van Nistelrooy. And you have one more. This one I had to look up, Rob. I don't remember this name. But he did it in May of 2014.
May of 2014. It's not Robert Van Persie. No, it can't be him.
No, it's not Van Persie.
No idea.
James Wilson.
James Wilson.
And I, and again, like I said, on that one, I had to Google it to take a look. But James Wilson, I think it was May 4th of 2014, scored a double in his debut for Manchester United. So Marcus Rashford, Ruud van Nistelrooy, James Wilson, and now Romelu Lukaku, the only players to score a double in their debut match for Manchester United. So I got nothing else on the plan, Rob. Want to hit the closing music?
Sounds good.
Well, let me see if I can find it here because I can't seem to find it on my computer. Let's see here. Oh, I've lost the exit music.
Oh, lost the exit music.
Nope, I've got it. Never mind. We've had enough internet fail for tonight, haven't we? All right, let's hit the closing music here. That's better. All right, so for episode 172 of Low Limit Football, special thanks again going out to Rosa Maria Rico of Soccer La Duma for joining us tonight. Next week, we'll have another guest coming up, but keep an eye out on our This Week in Football handle as we preview this week the Italian Serie A, we preview France, and we're going to preview England this week. We'll have all those up after we do them as recorded shows. So next week we'll give you Spain and we'll give you Germany. So for episode 172 of Low Limit Football, I am Joe Uccello.
I'm Roberto Rojas.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and good night.